Let's continue talking baseball. We are very happy right now to be joined by Dan Fitzgerald. He is the manager for the Kansas Jayhawks. They look to head to the NCAA tournament. They play Creighton coming up this weekend in Fayetteville. Dan, happy to have you join us today.
It's good to be on with you, man. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. Dan, what was it like to hear your team's name called that you guys were going to get a chance to advance your season?
Well, it was really special. You know, this has been such an awesome journey for us the past 3 years, and so many people have given just massive, massive blood, sweat, tears into us being to where we are right now. So I think to be able to celebrate it with our administration and our players and my staff and all the people who support our program was a really, really special moment.
Dan, I'm looking at your career, and we talked about this a little bit the last time you were on here, but in all of this, have you allowed yourself just to kind of sit back and look at what you've accomplished and how far you've come? I mean, we're talking pre-COVID. You were at Dallas Baptist as an assistant coach. Fast forward 5 years, you're taking a team to the NCAA tournament. Have you allowed yourself to just think about how cool all of this has been for you?
Probably not like I should. I think part of the curse of coaching is that, you know, you see all the warts and you see all the landmines out in front of you. So I usually try to do that sometime in August when things are settled down and recruiting's done. But, you know, there have certainly been plenty of moments where I've been able to celebrate with my family and friends and my staff. So, yeah, I mean, it's a yes and no answer. Probably not like I should, but I've certainly enjoyed every step of the way.
Dan, we talk about a lot of the changes in college athletics, and we only really look at it through the lens of football and basketball. In your world, how have all of the changes in college athletics changed your job, changed your day-to-day?
Well, it's changed recruiting tremendously, where, you know, the model of recruiting a 15, 16, 17-year-old kid and walking them through high school and coaching them for 4 years in college and kind of watching them mature into, you know, grown men, like that has changed because the portal has just turned it into such a, we can just get older players who are more mature and further along in the development process. And therefore, you know, you get a 23-year-old to 24-year-old with 4 or 5 years of college experience under their belt. So it's changed the recruiting process, and it's certainly changed the you know, when you recruit a bunch of older guys, you're recruiting more guys the next year. So the numbers are different. Certainly the money in the NIL has changed everything, and that to varying degrees. You know, we're not running at the top of that world like some of the schools in the SEC are, but we've had to, you know, lean heavy on our supporters to be able to put together packages for players. And it's just, it is what it is. The thing that hasn't changed is the character and integrity and all those things, being a great teammate, competing, those things are and will always remain at the front of our program. So it's affected us, but not probably like other places, because we've stayed really true to that process of finding the right guys.
Right now, we're talking to Dan Fitzgerald. He is the manager for the Kansas Jayhawks. They are heading down to the Fayetteville Regional. They're going to take on Creighton Friday at 7 o'clock. You can catch that over on ESPN+. Dan, I want to say congratulations. You were named Big 12 Coach of the Year. Tell us how you found out that you won that award.
Oh, it's pretty cool, man. We were actually practicing at Dallas Baptist, the regional being down at Globe Life, and they played on the video board. You know, my staff had surprised me with a message from my three boys that my wife had put together. So, you know, my three boys who are 14, 13, and 11, you know, all of a sudden their faces popped up on the video board and they announced it. So pretty sweet moment, kind of hard to keep it together. So, that's something I'll remember until I'm old and lose my mind.
Dan, I imagine this has to be not only just a win for yourself. Obviously, you know, you're the one getting the accolades, you're the manager, but this has to be a win for your staff. If you look at, you know, what you guys have accomplished since you've taken over at KU, I mean, you guys won 25 games, 31, and now you won 43 games, and you're heading to the NCAA tournament. This is not just a bonus for you. This is a bonus for everybody who has been associated with helping you guys grow as a program.
Yeah, this is the administration. This is my staff, and obviously it's all about the players. So, you know, the individual awards always point to the work of a team the Coach of the Year thing, I very much look at that as a staff award. You know, there are so many things in the day-to-day of our program that, you know, I don't even think about anymore because we've delegated and we've kind of found our flow and kind of a finely tuned machine when it comes to our operation. So you hit the nail on the head, man. These are all staff awards, you know, an administration that's invested and poured into us. And, you know, Travis Goff has, you know, just done such an amazing job at KU since getting there, and his entire team of deputy ADs and support staff are just so elite. So yeah, these are always a team awards, and my staff is very deserving of all the accolades they receive.
Dan, just taking a look at the region that you guys are in, I imagine, obviously, Arkansas is a very tough, great program, great history. I'm guessing you probably would have picked this one. This is a very easy drive for your fans to be able to make the trip down to Fayetteville. It's got very much a regional feel with Arkansas, you guys, and then you also got Creighton in it. I mean, this is a really good region for you guys to be a part of.
No question. And, you know, there were 16 of them, and we were happy to be in any of the 16. You know, in year three, to be in the spot we're in, you know, we would have taken any of them, you know, and we were really close to hosting as well. And just to have that out in front of us as a goal in the future, obviously, is great. But, you know, I think that the big one is we are going to have a great outpouring from Jayhawk Nation. And there are so many fans that have traveled with us all year. And the NCAA regional in baseball is a little different in that they actually do try to keep it regionally. You know, in basketball, I think they line them up, you know, 1 through 64, and then they just start pairing numbers, 1 verse 64 and 2 verse 63. You know, to some degree, I know there's some nuance to that, but in our sport, it's very much they do try to keep it regionally. Now, the Big 12 had 8 teams in, so inevitably there's going to be someone from the Big 12 sent somewhere random, like TCU is going up to Oregon State, and so you end up with a little bit of that. But yeah, the regional thing for us is awesome. It's 4 great teams in this one. North Dakota State's got a really nice team and very competitive in their league. And then obviously Creighton had a fantastic year and is a great historical ball club. And then Arkansas is obviously the one seed there in hosting. So it's going to be a great 4-team tournament. We can't wait to get going on Friday night.
Right now, we're talking to Dan Fitzgerald for a couple more minutes. He is the manager for the Kansas Jayhawks. They are heading to the NCAA tournament. You mentioned how deep the Big 12 was this year. How is that depth and playing those teams on a week-in, week-out basis? How do you think that's helped prepare you for this next step of your season?
Yeah, I think we kind of look at the season in those different stages where you have the preseason that's, you know, preparing you for the season. And then you've got the non-conference that then prepares you for the conference and the conference that prepares you for conference tournament and et cetera, on and on. And yeah, I think the one thing in the Big 12 is that every pitching staff has someone at the top of that rotation that's going to, you know, pitch in the big leagues. And so very much the same in the SEC and really the same across most of college baseball. You just have guys that are going to pitch well into professional baseball in that Friday night spot. So I think you become very battle tested because every Friday night you got to be hooked up, and then Saturday is very similar, and you know, Sunday oftentimes comes down to who's tougher and who's got a better bullpen. So we've been tested by some great teams. I mean, you think about eight teams that are playing in the postseason, and we played all 7 of the other ones. So you know, it's an unbalanced schedule in the Big 12. So there are teams that didn't play, you know, some of the teams at the top. But we played them all. And so I feel like you think about facing 7 of those teams. That's a big chunk of the NCAA tournament that we've already faced. And then you look at some of our non-conference and the way that prepared us as well. So we are certainly battle-tested and won't be surprised by anything we see this weekend.
Dan, last question. I'll get you out of here. We appreciate your time. I know this is a busy time for you. All right, Dan, this is a 2-part question. We love asking people like you this question. Give us your best player that you've seen in college. Just you saw a guy play college baseball and you said he is going to be a star one day. Also, who is the best baseball player that you've seen in the pro level? Who's the best baseball player you've ever seen?
Best college player I've ever seen would be Dylan Cruz, who I got to coach at LSU. And most of the time when I get asked that question, I ask a follow-up of like, do you want someone besides Dylan Cruz? he was so next level. And then best big leaguer I've ever seen. Wow. You know, growing up in Minnesota, I got to see Kirby Puckett, who obviously is a Hall of Famer. You know, I got to see Clayton Kershaw pitch a couple times. That's probably the greatest lefty of our generation. I have not seen Ohtani in person. I saw Bobby Witt Jr. play 100 times in high school, and his dad's a buddy of mine, and I've gotten to see Bobby his whole life. So I would probably say I'd probably throw Bobby at the top of that list, given the fact that I've gotten to see him for so long, and I think he's such an exceptional talent. And it was very obvious early on in high school that he was going to be a all-star type big leaguer.
I got a chance to see Shohei play a couple of years ago. It was last year, actually, with the Angels. They're actually coming back to Kansas City here coming up in a couple of weeks. There haven't been many times that growing up in Kansas City that I know that I've been excited to see an opposing player hit a home run. I got a chance to see Shohei hit a home run. I actually stood up and clapped for it. I was just like, you know what? I might not ever see him hit a home run again.
Well, if you go to another one of his games, you'll see him hit a home run. But you could debate that he's in the conversation of greatest players in the history of the sport. I mean, to be able to do what he does on the mound. And I actually saw a video of him last night. I think it was last night on SportsCenter. He's throwing a live bullpen to hitters. So talk about a generational talent. That guy is really, really special.
That is Dan Fitzgerald. He is the manager for the Kansas Jayhawks. They play this Friday going up against Creighton. They're looking to make the College Baseball World Series. Dan, I want you to know that we are cheering for you on this show. We want you guys to go all the way to Omaha.
Thanks, buddy. Rock chalk.
Absolutely. That is Dan Fitzgerald joining us on the show today. Rob, you know what? I am willing to put my college alliance down for you guys. I'm cheering for KU to make it to Omaha. I'm cheering for K-State to go to Omaha. We're looking to have the K-State manager come on the show tomorrow. Would love to catch up with him. We're supporting both of the college baseball teams on this show. I'm not picking any favorites. I'm cheering for KU and I'm cheering for K-State.
I would love it if KU went to Omaha. Omahawks, baby. Here we go.
Can we just talk about Kirby Puckett for just a really, really quick second? In 1998, I looked it up because I was curious. Kirby Puckett led Major League Baseball with 234 hits. He hit 42 doubles back in 1988, had 24 home runs, 121 RBIs, hit 356 back in 1988. You know what? They don't make baseball players like that anymore. They make them like that with the power and the RBIs. That guy now would hit 256, not 356, the way that he did in 1998. No, it certainly would be a treat to watch that guy play game in and game out. Let me ask you this, Rob. Is this something that KU fans are sort of hopping on the wagon? And I don't say that to poke fun. I understand that baseball is usually not people's go-to sport when we're talking about college athletics. You, for example, you are a KU season ticket holder in football. You are a KU season ticket holder in basketball. You've maybe been to a handful of KU baseball games in your life, but I mean, they got a chance to go to the College Baseball World Series. This is the first time that they've made the playoffs since 2014. They play a game on Friday night. Is this going to be something that you're making it a point to be home and kind of keep your eye on it? How are you handling the Jayhawks this weekend?
I don't know that it's appointment television yet. Like, I'm not making a point to be like, hey, when I get home, I'm throwing KU and Creighton on. But I do find myself very excited and intrigued at the possibility of this team going to Omaha. We talk a lot on this show about how all sports are kind of niche outside the NFL. And I think college baseball is, even in that regard, super niche. But the fact that KU baseball started 10-0, and then we had the coach on. We just had him on a minute ago. He's a great guy. Seems like a really good dude to hang out with. And they were good, and they were winning, and the crowd started showing up. And then they started having games on ESPNU and ESPN+. And you could throw them on a Sunday, and they were fun to watch. I kind of started gravitating toward them a little bit. And like any fan base of any team in any country, if you start winning, the people start caring. And this team is winning, so I find myself caring. I would love for them to go to Omaha. I'm not going to be devastated if they don't. It kind of reminds me of last year, K-State baseball. ironically beat Arkansas in the regionals. And all of a sudden Twitter was like, oh my goodness, here we go. Because there's that feeling of you can accomplish something major.
It's honestly the one time when your college is good at one of these other sports. It's the one time that cheering for your team kind of feels like the Olympics. Like when you watch the Olympics, sure, I want the United States to win in track, or I want the United States to win in swimming. And you feel the excitement when they do win. But you're also not really torn up if they lose. Like you're like, oh man, we lost a 4x2. Like you're not, you don't know anything about it. You're simply cheering for them because they grew up in the same places that you grew up. That's what it's like when one of your colleges makes one of these kind of runs. I don't care if it's volleyball, baseball, softball. They are representing your school, your team, your university. You get to hop on the bandwagon for a couple of weeks. It gets to be fun. If they win, you're excited about it. If they lose, it's like, all right, well, in the college football portal, who do we get? You get a chance to then move on. This is actually the really fun time to pick up cheering for your school.
The Olympics analogy is absolutely perfect because you're all in for a short run. And if the all-in run is great, boy, are you proud for that Olympic thing. Yeah, you lost the 4x2, you're sad. But when you win the 4x2, let me tell you something. I've never been a bigger fan of insert name of 4x2 runner here. Like, that is a near... You do a lot of good analogies on this show. That one was near perfect.
Thank you, man. You know what? I appreciate that. I appreciate that you noticed it. I appreciate that you picked up on that. Let me ask you a question, and this is a very honest question, and I want you to tell me the truth. Is it me? Am I the problem? This is why. I do not have a favorite NBA team. You guys know who I cheer for in college football. You guys know who I cheer for in college basketball. I tell you guys all the time. Those are the only teams that I would consider myself a real fan of. I want the Chiefs to do well. I want the Royals to do well. But I don't have that live and die with everything they do mentality the way that you guys have. It's a job. So for basketball, just growing up where we grew up, I don't have a favorite basketball team. I normally fall in love with storylines. I like this player. I like this player. I don't like this guy. So I've gotten into the NBA over the years that way. For the last 15, 20 years or so, I've been on Team LeBron. I have been a LeBron fan basically since the first time I saw him play as a junior in high school. Hey, that guy's really good. He seems kind of cool. I want to cheer for him. But these last couple of years being on Team LeBron, at least in the summer, have forced me to find somebody else to root for. Well, this year, you know who I decided to pick up? I decided to pick up the Knicks. It just seemed like a really fun thing to do. Every time I hop on social media, their fans really seem like they're having a good time. I mean, they're going crazy. They're celebrating. It looks fun. Hey, what would it be like if the Knicks won the championship? So once we got to this stage of the finals and they knocked out the Boston Celtics, you know what I said? Man, I'm cheering for the Knicks. It looks fun. They got Ben Stiller sitting courtside. They got Timothy Chalamet, Spike. I get to be on the same team as Olivia Benson, Mariska Hargitay. Sign me up. Rob, why did I decide to do this? Since I decided to be a Knicks fan, they've won one game and lost three of them, and they're about to get eliminated back on their home floor coming up in a couple of nights. Is it me? Am I the problem? Am I the problem? Because my college basketball team faltered down the stretch after we got all excited about them and thought that this could potentially be the year, and I carried that energy over to the New York Knicks. So you're saying I ruined my real team, and then I ruined my fake team. I think I'm the problem here. I did this to the Knicks. They were doing perfectly fine until I hopped on the bandwagon. Then I decided to hop on the wagon. I did this.
I don't know it's you in that regard, but you do seem to gravitate toward teams that are known for disappointment in the postseason. Like, the Knicks have won a title since, what, 74? Isn't that the number? 1970-something? And we, in our childhood, saw them choke so many times in the postseason. Ewing misses the finger roll. Jordan, of course, beats them. Latrell Sprewell and Co. couldn't get past the Spurs. They couldn't get past Trey Smith. Last year, they couldn't get past Tyrese Halliburton. That feels like a similar story. I don't know that it's you, like you're some sort of mystical curse, but you seem to have a type. You seem to gravitate towards, man, always good but disappoints in the postseason. And you found yourself another person right in that lane. The Knicks are just Missouri-ish. They're just in a more historic arena.
Because those fans that don't win a lot, they seem to have the most fun. Does it not seem like they have the most fun?
They're the most excitable. That's not the most fun. They're the most excitable. They're the easiest group to get rowdy.
Yeah, because I just think about it. Like, cheering for KU, I mean, yeah, it sounds fun. You guys don't seem to have fun doing it most of the time. Your fans can never run on the court. Like, nothing about, no KU fan, it doesn't seem very fun. Every team gets compared to 2008. This team's either the best team we've ever had or it's the worst team we've ever had. Being a KU fan doesn't seem very fun. But you know what seems fun? Man, those once every 8 years where K-State's really got a chance to do something. God, it seems so fun, does it not? It just pops up out of nowhere. You fall in love with Jacob Pullen. Then you got Marquise Noel and you just, hey, I want to see them go to the Final Four. I want to see them do something. And then the moment you start to believe, the moment you jump on the wagon, it always comes down crashing. Like now, I want to cheer for the Pacers. I want to. I want to cheer for the Pacers. I mean, I understand Oklahoma City. Cool. I mean, I wouldn't be heartbroken if Oklahoma City wins. But if you're asking me right now, who do you want to see win the championship? I want to see the Pacers. But I know the moment I hop on the Pacers bandwagon, they're going to get swept in the NBA Finals by Oklahoma City. I don't want that for Indianapolis.
I will say this, and it maybe this is your point. You're just saying it in the NBA's tense. There is something that is extra lovable about when your team is the surprise. And I know KU basketball never gets to be the surprise. Remember that one? KU finished 6-6 in football. Remember they started 5-0? Oh, was it so fun? Where'd this come from? It was like found money. It was the best feel. Look at this. Being a KU basketball fan's fun because banners and the whole deal. But when it's a surprise out of nowhere, like Chiefs fans, you guys know that the Super Bowl years are the best. I'm not saying they weren't. But 2013 as a Chiefs fan was also fun. You went from first pick in the draft and just disastrous season in 2012, like historic bad all-time terribleness, to Andy Reid shows up, Alex Smith shows up, and you start 9-0. There is an excitement of, look what we're doing, look what no one saw coming, that is almost as enjoyable as the high-level winning.
This is why 2014 with the Royals is better than 2015. 2015, we all expected them to be good from the very beginning of the season, and they were good, and then they did exactly what we thought they were going to do. I'm not saying 2015 wasn't fun, but it was certainly a lot more fun when I had no expectations for the Royals, and I just woke up one day and was like, wait, hold on. They're going to the playoffs tomorrow? Wait, that game's at Kauffman Stadium? Well, I got to go. Sign me up. And then they win that game. And then you're thinking to yourself, well, I mean, they're probably going to lose to the Angels. The Angels got Albert Pujols and they got Mike Trout. And wait, they won both of the games in Los Angeles? They're coming back to Kansas City with the chance to win the series? I got to go to this game. Yes, it's always better for the discovery or when you're listening to the unsigned band that makes it. Your music is always going to be more interested when you are trying to figure out how to get it than when you already have it. That's what sports are like. That's why I like cheering for the Knicks. Yes, go Knicks. I mean, it's over now, but go Knicks. It was fun for those 2 weeks being a Knicks fan. I enjoyed cheering for the Knicks. Now I got to find a new team. I mean, I only got a couple more weeks left of the NBA playoffs, so go Pacers. That's who I'm cheering for. I'm cheering for Tyrese Halliburton. You know what I mean? That's who I'm cheering for. I'm cheering for Tyrese Halliburton to go out and win the NBA championship. All right, coming up on the other side, you know what, Rob? Let's do our football segment. We are 99 days away from the first game of the NFL season. And Ja'Marr Chase, he made a really good point. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here. So Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
So we are 99 days away from the start of the NFL season. Every day I'm going to give you guys a different, new, fresh, improved NFL thought that I have. Yesterday, we talked about Caleb Williams and how I believe that Caleb Williams has the most pressure on him of any quarterback heading into this season. The Bears have bent over backwards to try to accommodate him this season. They hired the best offensive-minded head coach that was available. They made two trades on the offensive line. In two seasons, they have spent multiple top 10 picks on a pass catcher. They spent their second-round pick this year on a pass catcher. They have done everything they can to try to help their offense and help their young quarterback and kind of steepen this learning curve a little bit. We'll see if it works. The next thing I want to talk about is I think that Cincinnati is still a very good team. I think that Cincinnati is a top five quarterback in the league. I think they have maybe the best wide receiver, certainly one of the top two or three wide receivers in Ja'Marr Chase. T. Higgins is going to be healthy coming into this year. There are a lot of reasons, I think, to like Cincinnati. Two things, though, usually go wrong for Cincinnati. They usually are dealing with some nonsense in the offseason. Sometimes it's of their own dealing. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's Joe Burrow is recovering from an injury and he's not going to be able to practice until August. That's usually not good. Sometimes it's something different. Sometimes it's a contract. Ja'Marr Chase is unhappy with his deal. T. Higgins is unhappy with his deal. Trey Hendrickson is unhappy with his deal. Usually the Bengals, they got some nonsense going on. And if there's one thing that I've learned from Mitch Holthus over the years of him joining us on the show, it's been this. Your habits in March, April, May, and the kind of foundation that you build, you can see that later on in the season. One of the reasons that the Chiefs usually get off to a good start, or Philadelphia usually gets off to a good start, is because of how they handle this part of the season. Everybody is there. They aren't a noisy organization. Everybody's participating. Everybody's pulling in the same direction. Once it's football time, let's focus in on football time. Hey, when it's your free time, go have fun. Travis, go do your podcast. Go to your girlfriend's concerts. Patrick, go do what you want to do. But when it's football time, when it's time to lock in, you guys need to come back to Kansas City. Let's do our work. Let's do what we're supposed to do. And then in your free time, go be free. That's not what happens in Cincinnati. They just ho-hum. They go through June. They go through July. They go through August. And then they think on week one, they can just flip a switch and they can just go out there and start the year 4-1. That's not how it goes usually. Here's Ja'Marr Chase.
If it was up to me, I wouldn't be out there.
You want to.
Oh, you wouldn't be out there.
If it was up to me, no. Of course not. You asking, do I want to play?
Right.
Not really. No. I think we do the, I don't mind like a series, but that's literally all we do. You know, we get, and that's not, you don't really feel mentally ready for a game like that. For me, I don't think I do. I'm not going to speak for everybody else.
So in your opinion, playing in the preseason is not a game changer for how you guys start?
I don't know. How do we start my rookie year? Did we play in the preseason? I don't know. What about the next year? Do we play preseason?
No.
What about the following year?
Going to.
We played that preseason?
No.
Sound like we need to play preseason, huh? I mean, y'all found your own answer. I just asked y'all a question. Y'all told me the answers.
Yes, Ja'Marr, you guys should start handling your offseason a little bit differently. Last season, the Bengals started 0-3. They dug themselves out of a hole. Yes, you finished over 500. But you started the season with a loss to New England. New England was terrible last year. New England was one of the three worst teams in the league. You scored 10 points against New England last year. 10. You started 0-3. You started 1-4 last or two seasons ago. So now in 2023, the Bengals, well, what do you know? They started the year 1-3. They got beat 27-3 in the first 4 weeks of the season by the Tennessee Titans. You should be embarrassed. Back in 2022, The year they lost to the Chiefs in the conference championship. Well, what do you know? They start the year 0-2. Then you got to dig yourself out of a hole. You can't continue to do this if you're Cincinnati. This is not what Kansas City does. This is not what Buffalo does. This is not what Baltimore does. How you handle your May and April and June, it affects how you perform in August, September, October. I don't know how many times you need that lesson if you're Cincinnati. This season, look, you've been given a gift from the gods if you're Cincinnati. You start with Cleveland and Jacksonville, two of the five worst teams in the league last year. Cleveland has no clue who their quarterback is going to be. Jacksonville was terrible last year. I bet you Cincinnati loses one of those two games. I don't know which one, but we've seen way too many Bengals games. I'm telling you, they are not starting 2-0. They're 100% losing one of those games. I mean, eventually, you guys will get that lesson. I mean, I don't want to do it. I mean, I don't need it. Well, you obviously need it. Look at your team. You guys are 3-11 the last 3 years in September, and you're telling me you don't need the preseason. You need to be the first one at preseason, setting the tone, setting the tempo. But what do I know? I'm just sitting here looking at the numbers. That was Ja'Marr Chase. Let's see how the Bengals handle this offseason. They're already fighting with their best defensive player, and their number one wide receiver said, I don't need practice like the rest of y'all folks. He sounded like David Ruffin from The Temptations. That's what it sounds like. Good luck to Cincinnati this year. We'll see how it goes for them.
I think it's fair to say that they handled it wrong, but I think if we polled most NFL players, most would tell you they don't like the preseason and they don't get much out of it. Like, you're right. Mitch Holthus always talks about the value of the preseason and the OTAs and the mini camps and the St. Joe's. And I'm not discounting that, but I'm sure if we got to, you know, hook Travis Kelce to some truth serum or Chris Jones, hey, how important is the preseason? They would both be like, we play one series and we go put a hat on. What is the value? Something in Cincinnati needs to change. They're taking their offseason too casual, but I don't think his opinion that the preseason is not for me is unique to him.
No, I don't think it's unique. At some point, what you guys have been doing is wrong. It's wrong. Your way of blowing off the offseason, it has not gotten you off to hot starts. The Bengals are the worst team in the league in the first 3 weeks of the season. They always seem to underperform. They always seem a step slow, a step behind. If you're trying to catch up to Kansas City, they're taking this time seriously. Mahomes, first one there. I just had another kid. I'm here. This is my job. It's my responsibility to be here. Travis Kelce dating the most famous woman in the world. I'm showing up. He's host of the most successful top 50 podcast in the world. I'm showing up to work because that's what I'm supposed to do. Chris Jones, there. Trent McDuffie, unhappy with his contract, there. We're all here. That is the tone that is set from the leadership group. That ain't the tone that's set in Cincinnati. There's a reason why the Chiefs win championships. It ain't just because their quarterback's better than everybody or their coach is better than everybody. It's other things too. It's culture. It's accountability. It's how you handle yourself, how you conduct yourself, how you police yourself. The Chiefs don't deal with unexcused absences at OTAs. Everybody's going to be here. Unless you got some contract and we're not going to stamp in front of your business, we are all coming to practice. You guys can come practice with me if you want at Camp Pat, but that does not supersede the work that we are putting in when it's time to get ready for the season. So Cincinnati can keep doing what they're doing. They can keep starting 1-3, and then they're four games back at Kansas City, and now they're playing keep up and they're trying to play catch up the entire fall and winter because they got off to another slow start. Coming up on the other side, you know what? Let's get back to talking a little bit about the Kansas City Royals. We'll do that next. Keep it right here. So Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. On your new home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
If you could go back, I guess maybe more importantly, if you would allow J.J. Piccolo the opportunity to go back, Rob, do you think he makes the Jonathan India trade? He has Brady Singer, a promising young pitcher. And it's not just that Brady Singer would continue to pitch for you. It is also, would you give up Brady Singer for Jonathan India? I think it is obvious what the Royals were looking for. The Royals wanted a leadoff hitter and somebody who would be on base for Bobby Witt Jr. And in their mind, what they're thinking is, well, Jonathan India gets on base, Bobby brings him home, we got Salvi and Vinny to give him a little protection in the lineup. This is how they envisioned the offense going. We're 2 months into the season. That ain't how it's going. Jonathan India, so far this year for the Royals, has one home run, 13 RBIs. He is hitting .232 this season. Now, he does walk. He has 24 walks this year. So, I mean, he is getting on base. His on-base percentage is .329, but offensively and defensively in a lot of ways, I don't think it has gone maybe how they had anticipated it or envisioned it. Do you think they would go back and make the same trade for Brady Singer? Do you think they would undo it, or do you think they would continue on even with the information that they have now?
I think they would do it different with the information they have now, but I actually don't think that has anything to do with India or Singer. I think it has everything to do with Michael Garcia. I think if Michael Garcia had played like this last season, then the word out of Kauffman one royal way would not have been, we need a leadoff hitter. The conversation would have been, we need a corner outfield bat, or we need another bat in some form, or an outfield bat. They may have looked for a center fielder, I don't know. But remember, last year, the Royals offense, again, not great. I've said it was better last year. It wasn't great, but it was like 13th, 14th, 15th in baseball. That was Michael Garcia leading off, and Michael Garcia did not have a great season last year. If you had told JJ, Michael Garcia is going to be a near 300 hitter and might be the second best or the best hitter on your team at times in 2025, what is your plan for the offseason? I think his plan would have been, that's my leadoff hitter again. I got to go find a corner bat. So I still think the Royals trade Brady Singer. I don't think there's a scenario where Brady Singer is a Royal in 2025. But I don't think Jonathan India would have been the move. I think if they knew they had Garcia like this, they had a leadoff hitter, they would have traded for a corner type of bat, which I don't know that's a cure-all, but I think that would be the better outcome, again, with the advantage of hindsight.
I think it's a little bit disappointing if you're looking at it, and I understand the history that you have with Brady Singer. I mean, yesterday was his best start, I think, pretty clearly. I mean, maybe you could argue he had a start back in early April that he went five innings. Maybe that's the start, but I mean, this is the deepest that he's gone in a ball game so far this season. Fewest runs. I mean, this was a really, really strong start that you got from Brady Singer. And for a pitcher who had been kind of struggling to go deep in games, I mean, less than a month ago, went 2 1/3 and gave up 7 earned runs in a game to the Houston Astros. For a pitcher who has not really pitched that well this season, it is kind of disappointing that he was able to come into Kauffman Stadium and throw a lot of zeros yesterday the way that he did. Brady Singer should have been somebody that, A, obviously you as an organization, you know very well, and has been struggling so far this season. That was a game that you anticipate just having a better offensive showing than what they had yesterday, but the Royals were the Royals. They scored 2 runs yesterday. We talked about it too much this season. You can't expect to consistently beat teams if you're scoring 2 runs the way that they did yesterday. Their offense didn't really give them a chance to go out there and win, on top of the fact they gave up 7 runs yesterday.
I also think, circling back to your question about doing the trade all over again, and the text line makes this point, and I think the text line nails this. If Brady Singer was back on the Royals this year, I don't know that Chris Bubich is a starting pitcher on the Royals. And right now, at last check, FanGraphs nowadays does like a Cy Young ranking, MVP ranking. They basically have gotten into the postseason percentage games, but with awards. Chris Bubich is 2 in FanGraphs to win the Cy Young. We're past Memorial Day. Chris Bubich, from her last postseason, was in the bullpen, and they thought he's a nice bullpen weapon. If the Royals don't make the Jonathan India move, and Brady Singer is still in Kansas City, is Chris Bubich a starter in Kansas City? And you could argue Chris Bubich has been their best starter this season. So it is disappointing. And you're looking at last night, Brady Singer, who's been mediocre this year, mowed down the Royals. But that's a story we've done about 50 times on this show. And the Royals have played just over 50 games. Hey, you know, Slappy goes out there and mows the Royals down. They lose 2-3. That's a story we've done. I still think the Royals made the right move by moving on from Brady Singer. Just with hindsight, I don't think it should have been for Jonathan India, but that's the advantage hindsight gives you.
I will give the Royals this, and I'm really trying to think, and if you got the answer to this, certainly let me know. I give the Royals a lot of credit for trading Brady Singer when the value couldn't have been higher. I think too many times we have had conversations about the Royals where they waited and waited and waited too long to eventually move on from a player, that they let his value basically expire and they didn't get the most out of him. I mean, they traded Brady Singer at the right time to trade him. I mean, it was his best year, arguably, as a pro. He gave you almost 180 innings last year. He had less than a 4 ERA last year, and he's 27 years old. If you're going to get out of the Brady Singer business, last year was the time to do it. Now, maybe you want a different return than what you ended up getting for Brady Singer, and I guess that's the topic here, but I give the Royals a lot of credit for they saw the writing on the wall. We have guys that can make up for him not being here. We got Michael Lorenzen. We got Chris Bubich. We got all of these other options. If we're going to do something with Brady Singer to go try to fill a need that we have on our roster, this is our chance to maximize his return. That's what they did. It just maybe hasn't yielded the dividends that they expected it to.
Maybe it's going to make it sound like a shill. And I feel like maybe we're saying the same thing, just different. We're in lockstep. That's how the Royals are going to have to win. You have to find players like Brady Singer in the draft. You have to develop them. And then when they're at the apex of their value, you have to move on. Now, you have to win those trades. And it looks like I don't think the Royals lost the Jonathan India trade. It's something they won. But that is what you have to do. You have to keep turning players like that into more players. Like, you have to at some point have a very serious conversation. Like, Bubich is fantastic. He has another year and a half in Kansas City before it's contract time. Do you next season talk about maybe moving Bubich and doing the same thing? Like, that is how teams like the Royals win. That's how the Rays are constantly in the playoffs. That's how the Guardians are doing it. Hey, Francisco Lindor is a star. We're walking on Francisco Lindor for a major haul. We then get the haul. Man, we got a bunch of good players. You're going to then move some of those good players for another major haul. Like, that is what the Royals have to do. So I think it was the right call, and they did it just right. They just didn't hit the way you wish you would have hit.
No, they certainly didn't. I think that's a very, very fair thing to say about the way that the Royals played this. All right, coming up at the top of the hour, you know what? Let's talk about small market teams and how sometimes I think teams use resources as a crutch when we have far too many examples that you can overcome that. I'll explain what I mean. Keep it right here, Sir Drive.